Together is a podcast where women share their real and raw rites of passage stories in life, motherhood, and business. I'm your host, Rachel Rose, a Women's Circle facilitator, mother, mentor, and community maker. I have seen firsthand how storytelling can be shame melting. I hope you leave these conversations feeling less alone and more connected to yourself, your inner wisdom, and to a circle of other women.
Hello, everyone. I'm coming to you from the land of teetering on the edge of burnout, which I shared on socials recently. And so the fact that this particular podcast was the interview that I did in this time was very interesting. Today I speak with Madeline McKenzie, who is a toddler mum and mental health social worker living in the northern suburbs of Melbourne. Madeline's business is called Sit With Self, and it's a therapy and coaching biz which she started on maternity leave in 2022. Madeline's specialty is working with high-achieving millennial women on what she has affectionately coined the millennial trifecta: intellectualizing, people-pleasing, and perfectionism. Now, if that does not summarize who I am and many things I struggle with, I don't know what. So I really enjoyed this conversation. I also just loved Madeline's honesty around, you know, the slower start to her business, what a successful launch looked like for her recently, and why that may surprise you, and then how the millennial trifecta shows up in motherhood as well. Enjoy today's episode. Well, welcome, Madeline, together. I'm really excited to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much, Rachel. I'm just so excited to be here.
We are going to talk about motherhood and starting a business and the triggering as fuck nature of the shadow work around starting a business and motherhood, because you have a beautiful story, and it's quite common in my audience and community that you started a business when you were on maternity leave, just because, you know,
it's
not hard enough.
Yeah, exactly. We just like to just stack on the challenges.
So let's start with that. Like, what was the drive to start your own thing? What were you doing before, or why did it make sense to start a business when you had a baby?
Yeah, well, you know, and I think this is such a common kind of, you know, origin story of this kind of stuff. But I was a mental health clinician. I was like managing a team of clinicians who worked with people who were homeless and had really significant mental health stuff going on. And and I kind of fell pregnant suddenly and kind of unexpectedly, which was beautiful. But it just kind of had this moment of unraveling for me where I realized that, you know, being on call at 3 a.m. and, you know, having this really high stress kind of work just wasn't going to work anymore. It absolutely wasn't going to work anymore. And I think it's this a lot of the time, and, you know, a lot of my clients as well, when you've got this really dominant kind of people-pleasing part, sometimes it takes a pregnancy for you to actually realize how much you're sacrificing yourself. Because you literally can't anymore, because in order to, you know, by staying up late and putting myself through stress and all that cortisol, I'm not just sacrificing myself. I'm like literally sacrificing the most important thing to me, which is my unborn child. So that was the kind of first unraveling. I was just like, holy shit, can't do this. Don't know what I'm going to do, but can't do this anymore. And I finally went on maternity leave, and I was really, I'd kind of had thoughts about opening my own kind of private practice before. And I just really didn't want to do the 9-to-5 slog anymore. I didn't want to have those same kind of expectations of work that I'd kind of been living through so far. And I was also kind of seeking my own mental health support at the time and was really not finding what I didn't find, I wasn't able to find kind of the mental health support that I really desperately needed at the time. So it was a bit of a combination of those things. It was like I wanted to create a life that looked really different to how I was, prior pregnancy, and I wanted to create a service that was so specifically targeted at millennial high achievers, that really got to the core of what people like me needed. That kind of triggered it. But I want people to know, though, the starting of that business, though, it was literally, I wasn't like doing it all at once, like it was like, okay, for the next 2 months I'm going to figure out how to get an ABN, and then I'd do that, and then I'd do the next thing, and I'd kind of tick it off. And it was super, super gradual. I want to really stress that it was, yeah, this real kind of, I did just make this big list and kind of things that I wanted to do. And just in moments, I kind of would tick things off. And I was just kind of amazed after that year how much I had done, just by doing these kind of little tasks that were what were moving me in the direction of this bigger goal that I was kind of holding.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you for adding that you weren't just replacing your other job with working full time and having a
Yeah,
baby.
no, absolutely not. Absolutely
Yeah.
not.
Your business is called Sit With Self, and I'm obsessed with your branding. I'm obsessed with your Instagram. Your branding is what made me find Amy Pearson of Sun Mother, who then built my website and did my branding, because I was just like, wow, I just love this. And your messaging is just really clear. Like, I feel like you've done a lot of strategic work around who that client is, who you're here to support in therapy and coaching. How did you come to that place? Like, how did you even know how to refine who you wanted to work for?
Oh, that was a huge learning. And to be honest, when I started, I actually had no idea about any of that stuff. And I think I kind of had a lot of, like, I knew who I wanted to work with, but it was all up here, and I wasn't kind of translating that into my messaging or anything yet. But it was when I actually went through that process of creating my branding, and I worked with Amy from Sun Mother, and she started to ask me questions around, who my ideal client was, and that's that kind of started the ball rolling of me actually, intentionally thinking about that stuff. But it's not something that you kind of just do and it's done, and you've got this, okay, that's my ideal client and that's my messaging and that's who I work with. It's such a flexible, evolving kind of beautiful beast that you that kind of, you take with you, that is carried with you. Because it's the more clients I've had, and the, who have been attracted to me, and the more I am someone who loves pulling out patterns. I really see patterns in people, and I really see common themes. So it's like the more that I've had these beautiful, women, non-binary people, who've been really connected with my work and have started working with me, the more that I've seen themes, the more that I've refined my messaging. But really, there was a few light bulb moments, of course, where I'm like, oh, that's who they are, And I think more recently, in the past few months, I've really connected to this idea of the grown up good girl, that a lot of my clients, they're the kids who were just so easy, so easy, so mature for their age, who won all the awards. They never had to worry about them. And now all of that conditioning is like showing up in ways that's just no longer sustainable. They're the grown-up good girls who are trying to be perfect all the time, who never want to make a mistake, who feel like that the only way that they're valued is by either helping someone else or keeping others happy, or it's these really heavy kind of burdens that these grown-up good girls have taken into their adult life. And so the more that I've kind of worked with clients and we've unraveled some of that stuff and I've noticed the patterns, the more I've kind of refined my messaging and discovered kind of new themes that have emerged. So I guess that's another thing. If you're starting a business, don't think that your message, you're just going to decide on it and it's done, and this is what you're doing. Yeah, I like to think of it as this beautiful, evolving, flexible, adaptive kind of growing entity that kind of, you know, moves along in business with you as you kind of progress.
That's so true. Yeah, you never have all the answers at the very beginning, but
no way.
I do want to commend you for just, yeah, the clarity, because what, you're 2 years in now?
Yeah, two and a bit years, I think. Yeah, two and a bit years. And I think this is the thing as well, all of it, but the, you know, to get to that point of the messaging now where I do feel like I have a lot of clarity, you know, and it does land a lot of the time, and I do go viral, you know, sometimes with the reels and things that I create. But in all of that, it's so much experimenting and so much, you know, failure and things flopping and things not working. And it's such a process of like being willing to try and just see, you know, because that's what I've, you know, I feel like starting out in business, and because I talk a lot about, you know, intellectualizing in my work, you know, this kind of pattern where we want to just stay in the theory, you know, learning the skills and learning and learning and learning and learning and learning and learning until we finally feel good enough. And then we'll practice and try the stuff out in real life, you know. And I think that's, and I was like that too when I was starting business as well. I was like, oh no, I'm not ready yet. I've got to, maybe I'll just do one more course or maybe another course on top of that.
True.
And then I'll do that. But I think this is something that I wish I could kind of tell my past self, you know, starting out in business, is that there's no course that is going to make you feel 100% confident in what you're doing. And the confidence comes from the experimentation and the trying and the getting it wrong and the, which is, yeah, scary, scary, scary work. It really is.
Yeah, it's just shitting yourself over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's totally shit. And this is the thing, it's like, when I said kind of in my email to you about the triggering as fuck nature of business, it's especially when you've got these people pleasing tendencies, you're literally putting yourself, you know, what you believe into the world and exposing yourself for people not getting it or thinking it's stupid or thinking whatever they think. And it's so, so triggering. Like it really is. It's like, here's what I think is going to really help this type of people. I fully believe in this and I'm passionate about it and I've seen it, you know, and people are going to push back. And I think for me, that was actually one of the hardest things. The more I refined my messaging and had an opinion of things, you know, around what I thought was most helpful for these type of women that were struggling with these certain things, the more refined and, you know, that messaging got and clear, also the more pushback I actually got. Also the more messages I got around that I was, you know, there's lots of things that people didn't agree with and thought that I was certain things or was, you know, and that was really, really hard. And I still find that hard. I still find that really hard.
Yeah, I'm 6 years in. I still find that hard. I actually shared one of your posts the other day, and it was about the self-sacrificing nature of mothers and how we can feel jealous of our partners, maybe taking time for themselves, going for a run. And, you know, I put my caveat around this doesn't include marathon running, doesn't include 6-hour fishing trips or cricket that goes all day. But yeah, if they're going for a 45-minute run and we're feeling all kinds of things about that. And there was, you know, lots of agreement in the DMs. And then there was this one person that just wrote, I don't agree with this. And I don't really stoke the beast in that because it's like, okay, great. You don't agree with it. But then they just sent me like many, many more messages about why they didn't agree with it. And the problem with having a business on Instagram and social media is, of course, we cannot cover the nuance of every
single person.
And so it leads us open to criticism from people where that particular thing we share does not suit them exactly. And this, a lot of people can't really filter it and go, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe it's for someone else. And so when you do receive those messages, it can be like a gut punch reaction in our body, just going, oh, I've done the wrong thing versus then stepping out and going, oh, actually, you know, there's just no way I can cover everything. I'm
got
15 seconds to convey something here.
And I think this is the thing. If you haven't kind of done some work around, I guess, unraveling that kind of tendency to people please, to want everyone to be happy with your messaging, you know, something like that happens and and your instant reaction is like, okay, well, the next time I do a post, I'll do this caveat and this caveat and this caveat and this caveat and this caveat. And, you know, but what, but then your message is lost, you know, because you're trying to appeal to everyone. And so, yes, you might not get that outraged person messaging you in your DMs saying why you're wrong and why you've severely offended them, but you also won't, that, you know, it won't get seen at all, actually, you know, it'll just kind of just be in the noise because you're not, sticking to your value and conviction around, you know, something that you have seen or have observed or, you know, So it's both, you know, it's your choice, but both paths have consequences, you know, for you and for your business. Really, we know which one is going to create a profitable and sustainable business. You know, it's one that's willing to have people disagree. You know, it's willing to kind of stick to your values and say what you believe without filtering or watering down your message to the point that it's it's not at all memorable, you know.
What are some practices or rituals or just things you do to prep yourself? Like if one of your reels goes viral, how do you kind of go, all right, I've got to get on here and have a look what people have to say?
And I think for me, you know, I talk a lot about parts work and, you know, that I have a people pleasing part, you know, that's that good girl part. And I love her, you know, she has been a part of me that has helped me to survive for so long. So often when something like, you know, when that part of me is triggered, and I know this can sound like a little woo-woo to people, I literally close my eyes and I imagine sitting with her and I let her say how hard it is and I let her say how scary it is and I let her, you know, say that she wishes everyone in the world would just love her, you know, and I imagine myself. That's the thing that I find most powerful, is me sitting with that part of myself and just allowing her to say how scary and hard it is. And for me to just hear her and be with her and comfort her and hug her in, or do whatever she kind of needs to help her through that. So yeah, that's what I find most powerful for myself. But the other thing as well, I think I said this to someone else on a podcast recently, but you know, when that stuff happens, you know, it's the thing that all of my parts feel like is life-threatening. You know, this comment from a stranger, my body thinks that, that a bear is about to attack. And that's what's also happening. And if you're like me, you sit in front of a laptop for a lot of the time, you know, you don't get the chance to kind of discharge that, all of that nervous system energy that's mobilized. So the other thing that I find super helpful is I go outside, I've got a medicine ball, and I connect with that kind of urge to kind of run away. And I literally slam that ball as hard as I can and just help to kind of discharge that, that mobilized kind of fight flight energy that's telling me that something really life-threatening is about to happen. So that has really helped me as well. Rather than trying to just go straight to calming, I find the kind of, mobile, you know, allowing it to kind of go somewhere has been really, really helpful. So a lot of those practices, and during my, I did a launch recently. Oh my God, that slam ball, my lawn got ruined because because I was outside slamming that ball, you know, so often. Yeah. So, but, you know, you don't have to slam a ball. Obviously, that's like, you know, very specific. It's something that I have found my system really loves, you know, really, really responds to, but, you know, can be anything, you know, that other things that people might connect to.
Yeah. I love that visual. Just I'm imagining your partner like in the kitchen doing the dishes and looking out and Madeline's just slamming that ball again.
Yeah. Seriously. No, sometimes, usually it's him tapping on the shoulder being like, do you need to slam the ball, love? Yes, I do. Give me five.
That's beautiful. Okay, let's talk about the launch then. So firstly, let's talk about what the launch was about and who it was for. So you've coined this term, the millennial trifecta. And
yes,
what is that and who is it for?
So I guess, you know, as I was kind of saying before, I think one of my gifts is that I'm very good at kind of pulling out patterns in people. And what I kind of noticed, not only myself, but in so many of the women that I was working with, were these three kind of distinct parts that were really showing up a lot. And they were, you know, people pleasing, perfectionism, and intellectualizing. So I kind of coined this term, the millennial trifecta, to I guess encapsulate all three. And I designed this group coaching program that was really specifically targeting these different parts. And, you know, through doing this parts work stuff that I've kind of just talked about a little bit, as well as, you know, really targeting kind of nervous system energy and working on the level of the nervous system as well. So it was all really, because obviously when you've got these three kind of parts in the lead in your life a lot, you're much more prone to burning out. Mm-hmm. So the real aim of this program was to disrupt the cycle of this chronic burnout, but, you know, through targeting these three deeply ingrained patterns that are often patterns that we've been carrying from, you know, early in our life. And yeah, so it's for the grown-up good girls. It's for the, you know, the burnt out high achievers. And yes, I launched, I don't know how long ago that was now, but I launched it maybe a couple of months ago now. And I've just started with kind of delivering the content and doing the group coaching, which has been, yeah, really, really incredible.
And how did that launch go?
Well, this is interesting. So I want, and this is the, you know, I guess being really specific in how you define success. To me, it was an incredibly successful launch. Do you want to know how many people are in my group coaching program?
How many?
Two.
Yeah, that is two amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's other things that kind of came of this. So obviously the launching process, you know, I had to really step into my power of, I have valuable knowledge and I believe, you know, that, you know, these certain practices that I'm guiding you through, they're going to really help disrupt that cycle of chronic burnout, you know, and it's hard. Oh my God, stepping into that place and really, even though I know I believe it because it's helped me and it helps my clients that I work with one-on-one, stepping up on, you know, on a public platform and saying it, it was really hard. And I feel like it was such a time of incredible growth for me because it was, you know, you again, I was just constantly triggered. And then you have to reflect and be like, okay, if I believe this, you know, what's coming up here? Why don't I feel worthy of saying this when I see other people say it and I think they're great and fine? Like, what is it about this? So it was a lot of, yeah, intense kind of doing really hard things, you know, getting triggered, reflecting, you know, realizing there's still beliefs that I'm holding on to about myself and my worth, kind of reflecting on that, working on that with my therapist, you know, coming back. It was a really big triggering growth, yeah, time, the launching. But I think it was a success for me because, you know, I ran like a free masterclass, which I was all about, you know, it was just a kind of a bit of an intro to the program, but it was called From Cortisol to Curiosity. And again, four people came to the live thing. But then I had a lot of people watch the replay over a weekend, which was kind of surprising. And I got so much positive feedback around the value that I'd kind of injected into this hour free masterclass. And so that felt like a huge success to me, you know, even that, you know, it was such a, and I'd never done anything like that before. So that was huge. And as well, something that came out of the masterclass, this is, you know, weeks later, is that I actually got approached by a very prominent health magazine for women to be a contributor for their content, which has been incredible. So I think this is the thing. It's like, yes, there's only four people, but that was at the masterclass, but you don't know who those four people are. You don't know what connections they have. So you deliver the shit out of it, you know, deliver it as though it is to, you know, every person that needs to hear this is here, you know, and because you just don't know, you know, what's going to come of it. And the same with, you know, even, you know, I wanted to get, you know, 15 to 20 kind of people in the program, but I got two, but oh my God, the two that I got, oh my God, it's just like, it's this magic where you just like, I designed this for you. Like, you are the person that I was holding in my heart when I was writing all of this. And now you're here and now I get to hear your story and we get to do this together. It's just, you know, the two that I got they're my people, you know, they're the people that this is for and they're the people that this is going to help, you know? So again, I just, it's, yes, it's only two. And yes, I guess it's more of an investment at the moment rather than something that's, you know, financially profitable for me right now. But I'm really kind of seeing it as an investment. And yeah, and it's just, it's learning, you know, it's me, it's the, we call it the beta round, you know, it's the me doing it for the first time, and it is still a success. Two people is a success.
It absolutely is. And, you know, as someone that's mentored quite a lot of other women in business and particularly mothers, I can say with full confidence that this kind of attitude that you have and the way that you're reflecting on a launch, you will go far in business with this kind of attitude, because it is when we have something that doesn't necessarily go as planned and then we label it as a failure and then we never try again. And we shut down from any learning opportunities from what we could have gleaned from the experience. And we don't launch things and we don't show up and because it's scary and hard. And so much missed opportunities can happen from that. Just even through the launch, like you made stellar Instagram content during that launch. It was funny. It was informative. You would, you know, on your A game with the reels. And so you probably gained followers.
Yeah, I gained followers. Yeah.
So more people were introduced to your work just from simply launching a thing that they didn't join, but that's okay because they might join something in the future or they might want to work with you one-on-one.
Yeah.
Because they really enjoyed your style.
I had a couple of people, yeah, work with me one-on-one who hadn't kind of heard of me before. So that was another thing, you know. It's not just the metrics to do with who bought the course or what you're offering. It's all the other kind of things that are surrounding that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if there's one-on-one clients work with you on a longer-term basis, you know, we can re-step that and go, actually, that launch was worth a couple of $1,000. But on paper, you've got two people in. And then, you know, most people want the big shiny launch when they first start something because it's your heart and soul and the work and you put so much effort in it. If you actually have to deliver something to 15 to 20 people first time round.
Oh, yeah. It would be totally overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I think that's a thing. I think that's such a good point. It's like, I think also mothers starting out in business, especially if you've done it on maternity leave, slow and steady is actually so much better for your system while you build up confidence and you build up, you know, you're slowly showing your system that putting yourself out there isn't going to kill you. It's, you're not going to die. You know, you're just slowly giving yourself these small little experiences. So often actually like aiming for the sold out and aiming for the viral and aiming for the, it's don't like that's, it's actually too much. Like
yeah.
I actually found that the first time I went viral was awful, to be honest, because it happened more early on and I wasn't ready. It's like I wasn't quite ready for that big step up because I went from getting, you know, like 10 views, you know, on things to all of a sudden it was like 250,000 and I had all these people messaging me and they weren't necessarily my ideal client or who I wanted to work with. But so I guess that's just another thing that the slow and steady and gradual and kind of building up, although it's like infuriatingly slow sometimes and you feel like everything would just be better if I was just selling out or I was just booked out of all of a sudden. That's also, yeah, you might think you want that, but it's often a little overwhelming.
Yeah. And yeah, depending on what stage of motherhood you're at and the season of sleep or lack of sleep, like those things can just be so much harder and heavier as well to deal with. If you're had a rough few weeks with a baby and then you also go viral, and I don't want to say this to then scare people off and to keep themselves really small,
of
but
course,
it's like,
yeah,
it is, it's just like baby steps here help. They help your nervous system to feel okay, and then also you quickly realize what gaps you've got in your business and what you need to fill and how maybe you could automate something that you're doing manually, or maybe you need to get help with something here, whereas everything happens overnight, which it doesn't for 99% of the people.
Yeah.
It would be hugely overwhelming.
Yeah. And I think that's the beautiful gift that starting out my business so slowly gave me. And maybe that's the other reason my messaging is so clear now, is that I did have the space to kind of really, really work on that stuff, on the deeper layers of my business and what I was doing and you know, the values and yeah, that kind of stuff. It's like, whereas if I was just all of a sudden booked, you know, and for me booked because I'm not working full time, you know, it's not many clients per week, you know, the maximum 6 to 10 clients. I wouldn't have had the space to do that kind of deeper work on my business. So that's the something as well. And I think Amy kind of from some other kind of taught me this as well, because I did, you know, I'm not some like you know, business guru who never gets disappointed and wishes that they were making more money. Like, of course I have those moments. But often Amy would reframe. She's like, I would be like, oh, I don't have many clients this week. And she'd be like, beautiful. So you've got some space to do this deeper work. Like, let's do some messaging stuff. Let's do, you know, and really, really just, I guess, reframing the slower moments of opportunity to do the work that you don't get to do when you're kind of in the, you know, just trying to survive business, you know, getting all the things ticked off.
Totally. Yeah, that's such good advice. And I was listening to a book. I like Denise Duffield Thomas's work. I don't know if you know her. She's got a book called Chill and Prosper. Yeah. And I was listening to it this morning as I was walking the dog. And Denise, she's a multimillionaire now, but she's been in the business world for 20 years. Mm-hmm. But she was talking about when she first started, she's a coach, and there were other coaches that were seeing like insane amounts of clients per week, and she would compare herself to them. Mm-hmm. But she has been able to sustainably stay in the game because she hasn't been overstretching herself from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And she makes a lot of money now. Mm-hmm. But also when she started, she was talking to a room of four people. Like, she would have these workshops that she was really excited about. It's all around mindset stuff and mm-hmm. money work and all that kind of stuff. And she'd be teaching to three, four people, and then it would just slowly build over time. And now she teaches to hundreds, if not thousands. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anyone that's listening to this and hearing about a launch of two, like, that's actually an amazing origin story that Madeline, you'll tell one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As those early beginnings, and it's much more relatable than going out there and saying, I launched my first program and 150 people joined, and you can do it in 2 hours a month.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Which is a lot of the stuff that we're seeing on Instagram at the moment, especially around blending motherhood and business. That is this effortless frolicking in the fields where you can work from your phone and your baby can just be there with you. It's like, mm-hmm. that's not what it looks like.
Yeah, I love it. Was it you had something about, like taking a shit and making millions or whatever it is, you know? It's like, not realistic at all.
It's not realistic. So what does your kind of week look like in the motherhood blend? Because you've got a toddler.
Yeah.
Do you have money support systems that you rely on to be able to do your work?
Yes, absolutely. So I work 3 days. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I've got his grandma who looks after him on one of those days. And then he goes to a daycare for two of those days. And I do a couple of sessions, like one or two sessions on a weekend every now and then, but not a full day. It's just when my partner will take him for an hour or two. So I do that as well. So yeah. So mothering on the rest of the days. Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you, when you transitioned him into care, did you tackle what many mothers and business have to with the reoccurring germs and sickness and having to cancel and schedule? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was so, I think that was one of the things that was so surprising for me. The transition to putting your child in care is so hard, so hard. Yeah, just emotionally and everything, every element. And yeah, we did. He had the constant, for me, you know, people said 6 months of sickness, but for I feel like it was a full year of of just constant kind of sickness. And I think that was the hardest part there, was because, you know, when you're starting a business but you're not quite yet making money, but your partner is making money, to then, you know, it was this really difficult thing to navigate where, you know, I had to, because we were still sharing, well, I wanted, you know, to share sick days, you know, that I didn't have to do every single sick day, because then I would never work on my business. But it was a you know, really a lot of negotiation with my partner, because he's like, but you don't have any clients on today. So, you know, but I'm taking a sick day, you know. It was a lot of really tricky conversations around, you know, but I'm not going to get anywhere in my business if every single sick day I'm taking, because then I never work on my business and then I'm never going to get the clients, you know. It was just this a lot of tricky kind of navigating sharing.
That comes up a lot in my mentorship. It's that taking time for yourself before you can see it, but you mm-hmm. trust and believe in it,
yeah,
and mm-hmm. then it's really even harder when you're in a partnership
particularly if they work in a job that is outside of entrepreneurialism, mm-hmm. where they yeah. get paid from someone else, where they have a routine and structure, and you're trying to create something completely different and they don't get it, especially if they're not really on Instagram. I've had a lot of people go like, my partner doesn't get why I have to spend so much time on this side mm-hmm. of my business, or yeah. So just a word of advice for anyone, don't try and get your business advice from your intimate partner.
Yeah, no way.
They're not in this world. Mm-hmm. But I really love to hear that you had those difficult conversations, because mm-hmm. it's true. It's like, if you take every single sick day, then yeah, you don't have any clients, but you're also not going to get any.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just, you kind of get trapped in a bit of a cycle. Yeah. Yeah. And I think as well, it's so easy when you're starting out in business. Like, another thing I really struggled with was I did start to get a real scarcity kind of urgency mindset, because he was sick so often, I would then, you know, I'd get a day and like, okay, he's not sick. I have to do everything. I have to squeeze 2 weeks of work into this 3-hour slot, you know? Yeah. And I think that for me, because I think that's a trap we often, when you have kind of, I guess, perfectionistic tendencies as well, we're like, oh, I'll just cut down the time that I work and then everything will be okay. But often the sneaky thing that perfectionists do is that we then try and fit the week of work into the 3 hours, you know? Mm-hmm. And we're like, why am I burnt out? I don't understand. So yeah, that was just another thing that I definitely had to work through. It was just this real urgency. It's like, oh, but what if he's sick next week? So I have to get everything done right now. If I don't get it done right now, then I'm never going to, you know? And so really, really having to, I guess, you know, notice that was happening was the first thing. And really just kind of, I don't know, you know, I don't even know what it was that I did, just soothe those kind of parts of myself that felt like there was never enough time, because I get it. I get why those parts are kind of showing up, but it was, that's, you know, if I'm constantly squeezing all of everything into a short amount of time, like, I'm going to burn out regardless of the time that I'm kind of working.
Yeah. I will say, it must be tricky being a therapist with all of this mental health knowledge and then still having to navigate the same world that we all live in.
Mm-hmm.
And then knowing that you should know better, do better.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and sometimes yeah. falling up short of that.
Totally. And I think this is something that I struggle with so much, because especially during my launch, because, you know, I was talking, you know, it was all about burnout and it was all about preventing burnout. And you know, but I'm you know, I really want to show up authentically and on Instagram and on social media, but that's the thing. But I'm still a human being who does burn out and you know, does or starts to realize that I am and has to do all the stuff. You know, I'm not like immune to it. And but it is this tricky balance of, there's parts of me that worry, that are concerned that, no, you know, oh, no one's going to want to work with me if they know that I'm still struggling with the things they are. But what I've actually found is the opposite is true.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually, people desperately want a therapist that is deeply human and willing to not, you know, not be that blank slate, to you know that you're in the trenches with them, that you're, you know, we're in this together kind of mentality. But you know, there's still parts of me that kind of speak up and fear that people are going to think that it must be a shitty therapist if I can't even sort this stuff out in my own life, you know?
Ooh,
you know,
it's, that's it's a big this, one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really common in circle facilitation as well. So women thinking that they need to be so perfectly put together mm-hmm. to hold circles and hold space for other people. And like, yes, don't arrive at a circle and facilitate something in the middle of a crisis. You know, have your own tools that you rely on and know who your people are that you can debrief with and get support from. And I imagine it's really important as therapists to have your own therapy and to have mm-hmm. your own network there, but you certainly don't need to be 100% healed, whatever that is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what holds a lot of women back from mm-hmm. starting a business, from holding space for others, from being a helper professional,
mm-hmm.
is that idea that they're not enough, they're not further along enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, with the perfectionism things, what, any tips or tricks? I won't use this as a personal therapy session.
Well, I think, I don't know. It's, I know it's, maybe this is a bit of a cop out, but I always, like, the thing that I've noticed a lot about, I guess, the women who think, who come to me and are usually burning out, they don't think they're perfectionists, though. They're actually really shit. And
interesting.
They're just, you know, and I think this is the first thing. I know that they often think they're self-aware, but often perfectionists don't actually think they're a perfectionist. They think that they're doing a worse job than everyone else, you know? And so for perfectionism, I find that just awareness and noticing is so, so powerful, as in, you know, it's that real kind of, I guess, a real pressure to meet some kind of standard, to do something in this way that's going to absolutely, you know, avoid any sort of disappointment or any kind of negative reaction from someone else. You know, it's this, it's almost like this noticing that you're, these expectations that are not human, you know, that you're expecting yourself to be like some kind of, you know, robot that's able to do these things. So yeah, the amount of times that I have women come to me that like, oh, I know, I'm not a perfectionist. But when you kind of unravel, you know, there, you just, you're like, yeah, you definitely are. And I relate so keenly to that, because I was the same. You know, I remember in my before I was pregnant and I was working as a clinician, you know, I didn't realize at the time, I thought I was doing such a shitty job. You know, I thought that I wasn't getting things done. I wasn't, you know, doing the best for my clients. I was like, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm working so hard, and I was trying, you know, and I was working overtime and really trying to get all the time. So a really interesting thing that happened to me is that I was then promoted to be the team leader of this group of clinicians, which meant that I was kind of overseeing the work of everyone. And you know what happened? I was like, so I kind of saw the reality of what everyone else was doing for the first time, because we were kind of, it was very siloed, you know, you don't see the work that people were doing because it's a lot of confidentiality and that kind of thing. But it was just this moment where I was like, oh, I had been placing these expectations on myself to get everything done, to not have anyone ever, you know, upset with me, to do, you know, all of these things that I just had accepted or had just thought was just, that was reality. You know, everyone else was doing that too. And so often something that I find really soothing for my perfectionism is that my 50% is usually actually other people's 80%. You know, and I know that might sound arrogant, but it's actually a reality for a lot of kind of people who really struggle with perfectionism, is that, you know, your shitty is usually actually other people's pretty damn good.
Yes, that is a really, I'm going to repeat that to myself. Yeah. And that's something my partner often tells me. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yes, yes, I know. Yeah, yeah.
But it is, yeah.
When you
put it that way. And yeah, something I see with perfectionists as well is that not wanting to make any mistakes. Mm-hmm. And in circle facilitation, that looks like saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Doing a ritual wrong, as if you could like somehow do it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Offending people. And I was looking through your reels, and one of them, you made the suggestion to perfectionists is, go and intentionally make a mistake mm-hmm. today.
Yeah.
And my body was just like, oh no, I will F not no. do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but I think you said spell someone's name wrong intentionally or spell your wrong. And then I was reading the comments and like people had a lot of reactions around that practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to suggest that to anyone listening, go and make a mistake today.
And I think this is the thing, you know, we're kind of mentioning how a lot of the time people who do have those dominant perfectionist tendencies that, yeah, they don't realize they are. This is a beautiful exercise for just bringing that awareness, you know, because it's like, okay, well, if you're not a perfectionist, let's just make a mistake and just see. And I had so many DMs and from people just being like, oh, I'm not saying the wrong you're. No, that's no way. I'll do something else, but not that.
I will draw the line.
And it was just, you know, and I think that's the thing. It was this just a small little moment where people just paused and noticed how much reluctance and hesitation and, you know, and when a lot of the, in my DMs as well, we're kind of discussing, okay, and what would that mean? So if you were to make a mistake, you know, what would that mean then? And what's the fear there? if other people are allowed to make a mistake and you don't, you know, you don't think anything of them. And, you know, and then it did, it got to some heavy stuff of like that I'll won't be respected, you know, that people will think that I'm some kind of fraud, that I, you know, that I'm not good enough, you know. And yes, it was just like a really simple little tongue-in-cheek exercise, but it really got to the core. It developed that away, help people to kind of see how much they're kind of holding in terms of trying to be perfect and how they're actually moving through the world pretty successfully, avoiding making mistakes at a huge cost to themselves and their careers, but that they're doing it. And yeah, it was just kind of a moment, and that really helped people to kind of realize what was driving this and what the fear there was kind of underneath it.
Yeah, and it's just so stifling of creativity as well, because creativity needs mistakes to be made.
Yeah.
You never get anywhere if you try to paint the perfect picture in the first round, like write the entire book in the first draft. We just need to give ourselves the space to make the mistakes that we do.
Yeah, exactly.
I look back at some of my early posts from my business and like full cringe fest, but like
same, absolutely same.
Lots of love to that version of me was giving it a red hot go. And, you know, I'm now 6 years into my business because I am a perfectionist that constantly works on this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, I've acknowledged that, I've seen it, I see it come up time and time again, but I don't let it overcome me to the degree that I don't do anything, because I so easily could have done that as well.
Yeah.
And I've seen businesses stop completely because they're just too afraid.
Exactly. And I think this is the thing, and again, we kind of mentioned it before, but the more you give these perfectionist parts of yourself these small little doses of making mistakes, of doing things and just kind of reflecting and showing them that no, not everyone in your life abandoned you. No, you know, you didn't crumble and fall apart. No, you know, that the world didn't end. The more that we kind of give these parts of ourselves, these little experiences, the kind of, I guess, the looser the grip those parts have on those beliefs, you know, it's like they're still there. I think that's the thing, you know, I for me, I'm not trying to get to a point of that perfectionism doesn't exist, you know, that I'm trying to get rid of it. But it's just that the grip that it has on my decisions and my life and my behavior is just loosening, you know, and you kind of noticing it and making a choice that's more aligned with the life that you want rather than just kind of reacting automatically. And that to me is healing, you know, that's what it is all about, really.
I love that. I want you to be my therapist.
That's no, like I have so many good friends, because, you know, obviously it's the millennial trifecta. I have so many friends, you know, uni friends who are social workers as well, who they're my friends. I'm definitely not going to be their therapist, but you know, to say that, it's funny. Yeah,
because we do. We want more real humans doing this work.
Yeah.
I'm sick of sitting in spaces where somebody's, you know, acknowledging or nodding their head and you think, you have no idea. You have no idea.
Yeah.
How does the millennial trifecta show up in motherhood?
Oh my gosh. Huge. So I guess, I think one of the biggest ways let's just start with people pleasing for the first part. I think when you become a mother, obviously so many of us want to talk about being cycle breakers and doing things differently, but how that the actual practice of doing that is so much harder, you know, than talking about it. And, you know, the thing that I feel like a lot of my clients talk about is it's navigating having to tell your parents that, you know, you don't want them to do a certain thing, or no, we're not going to do that, or, you know, whatever it is, doing things differently, and how tricky that is, you know, how, you know, because it's having to have these conversations where you're putting your needs first and what you believe is right for your family, and you're having to navigate maybe your parents being disappointed, or your grandparents, you know, being disappointed in your choice and that kind of thing. So that can be a huge one. And as well as, you know, I feel like you talk about this a lot and around just that tendency to, you know, I guess self-sacrifice, just really ignore your own needs and put everyone else's first, and, you know, just completely ignore the things that you need over your family, to the point that you just, you know, you're a husk and totally burnt out. So I think that comes up a lot as well in terms of the people pleasing. And Yeah, and of course, yeah, and I feel like I've perfectionists becoming mothers is just a whole thing on its own. Like I don't even know where to start there, because often with perfectionism, it's a lot about you're so used to placing your value in some kind of tangible outcome. You know, it's like I do this and this will happen. You know, you're really focused on that outcome and getting that external validation. And I think the shift to motherhood, it's just, you know, kids aren't like that. Babies aren't like that. It's not X, Y, you know, if I do this, this, and this, you know, baby will sleep. I do this, this, and this. Baby will breastfeed perfectly. I do this. It's not how it works. So I think
there's no control at all.
There's no control. So it can be this real unraveling for people where they just feel so like a failure because they're not able to control, or you know, they do desperately try and control, you know, and burn out because they're trying to control the uncontrollable, you know, and they're. Or you know, they're trying to control and then they're when it doesn't work, you know, they're then making meaning about what that means about them as a mother, then they must be. There's something wrong with them, you know, that can be a huge thing. So it's such an adjustment, you know. I've just, yeah, in postpartum especially, of just, you know, yeah, reorienting your whole sense of value and purpose to the world. You know, it's just a really, although, you know, you logically know that having a child is invaluable on its own, I think people just still carry this deeper kind of beliefs around that they need to be productive and they need to do things and they need to, you know, have this child that does all of these things in order to be a good parent, you know, can be really, really, really heavy transition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, sorry. Yeah, I don't know if we have time, but the intellectualizing as well, I guess the last thing of the millennial trifecta was, I think, something, you know, I kind of mentioned it at the start in terms of business and courses, but I think especially as your kids get older, I fall into this trap as well. I feel like I just want to read all the parenting books and I want to, you know, it's so easy to parent these theoretical children in my mind, you know.
Yeah.
If I just do all of the, you know, this, I think for intellectualizing, it's this real tendency to want to just attain all of the knowledge and again, you know, but getting stuck in that place of just learning, 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 and, but being really fearful around actually putting anything into action, you know, trying things and because it's, you know, in the reality of parenting is that it's not going to look like a, you know, a parenting 101 textbook. It's going to be messy and you're going to mess things up and you're going to get angry and you're going to, you know, lose your cool. And that's the reality of it. But I feel like sometimes with intellectualizing, it's us really wanting to figure it out, you know, to have it all figured out and know exactly what the right things to say and do are. And which again, I think it comes down to that control as well. You know, when we have all of that knowledge, then our kids will, you know, will do the right things to make us feel like a good parent, you know. So they're all kind of connected. But yeah, I know that's a bit of a whirlwind, but that's some of the ways that I've kind of seen the millennial trifecta show up in motherhood and parenting.
I was driving in the car with four other mothers the other day and we were talking about toddlers and big feelings and how we do things that we never thought we would do. Like sometimes we bribe our children or sometimes we use screens in ways that we didn't think we would and yada, yada, yada. And then one of the mothers raised that she bought this course and she was like, I'm gonna listen to this course and I'm gonna learn about strategies about how to deal with my toddler's behavior. And it turned out every single mother in the car had bought that course.
Yeah.
But none of us listened to it because we didn't have the time to.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
But we'd all paid the money for it. It was sitting there in the drafts of our inbox and like, never listened to. But it was just such a funny moment of like, us trying to seek something outside of ourselves in that moment. And then the reality is it's also really hard to do all the things and be the perfect parent because it just does not exist. And even if you learn the scripts and the ways to talk to children, the child in front of you is going to be the child you need to parent, not some
exactly
mythical one from a course.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing.
No, thank you so much. It was, just beautiful. I love talking with you, Rachel.
Yeah, it's just I just love having these honest conversations about business and motherhood and just
Me
peeling
too.
back the layers of being like, this is what it's actually like, and it's okay. And it's, you know, it's going to be really supportive to some other mothers in business. So thank you.
I hope so. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Together. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider sharing that you are listening on social media or rate and review. This weaves a web of connection and makes a huge difference in getting these stories out to the women that need to hear them.